This is Nancy Casey with an update about the situation in Haiti, where grassroots activists in the country have been responding to the disaster there since the moment it began. Bob Corbett, a retired professor of philosophy from Webster College in St. Louis, has moderated an online Haitian interest discussion group since before the word internet entered the common vocabulary. Today I will read you a sampling of items recently posted on what's known as the Corbett List. Aletha Stahl asks list members for help in communicating with the many people who are eager to help and, quote, make a difference. How can we turn good intentions into sustainable benefits, she asks, and shares a draft copy of a letter. Hi, it's great that you and your group want to go to Haiti and do something. My suggestion will be a little bit radical. Don't go to do, go to learn. There's an organization that has hosted groups from the college where I teach that does a wonderful job of connecting students to a range of issues in Haiti. My students have learned some Creole, met with other young people, help cook meals from scratch, which means butchering turkeys, slicing vegetables, and so forth. They have met with Haitian groups working on various issues such as alternative development. Every dollar we pay just to be there and learn goes far with people who don't have other regular sources of income, but who are interested in earning a little money with dignity by offering something to us and not just getting a handout. I know that the leaders in the organization that's been helping us out survived the quake, and right now, their homes just outside Port-au-Prince are serving as a refugee camp for people needing a place to go. Perhaps soon, they or similar organizations will be in a position to receive visitors. My radical suggestion? Above all, don't go to help build something. Haitians need paying jobs, and it's far better to support organizations that hire Haitians to do this work than to undermine the few jobs that might become available. Instead, to help, for instance, you could find an organization to which you can take valuable medical supplies and fill your suitcases with these when you go. Be sure to arrange something like this ahead of time. While you're there, try to learn some Creole. Talk to Haitians, even if you can't say very much. For the return trip, buy up paintings, arts, and crafts to fill up your suitcases again. This will do far more than your physical labor. At the same time, be aware that depending on where you go, your purchasing power may undermine that of local people for the limited food supplies that enter the country. Right now, there are huge supply issues, and you don't want your daily needs to contribute to the starvation of others. In short, inform yourselves as much as possible in advance and make sure someone there is prepared to receive you. Please know that I'm not trying to discourage you, but simply want to point out the complexity of issues, realizing that you may have already thought these through. That was a draft letter by Aletha Stahl to people who want to go to Haiti and help, which was posted on the Corbett List. On the same list, Anne Christine Dadesky shares this idea. A day for Haiti, soon. A day of mourning and celebrating the survival at the same time. One that's a decentralized affair, global, allowing Haitians everywhere to speak as Haitians to Haitians, with the global community as witness. A spiritual affair, allowing members of the many sectors of Haitian society to speak and to mourn in their own fashion. This idea is receiving very positive response from the colleagues here I've shared it with. They are so busy, there's been no time to mourn, but all agree, especially with bulldozers arriving, parents of children and loved ones buried in the rubble are having a hard time, and all need some closure, even as they step forward to embrace their own survival and the need to continue on. Those are the words of Anne Christine Dadesky, suggesting a day for Haiti to the Corbett List. And then on the Corbett List, this posting from Thor Burnham, which is entitled Reflections on Tents. He writes, danger, sarcasm ahead. Having spent much of the last week pestering everyone and every organization I met for tents, including going down to the small airport to talk to the Canadian soldiers to plead my case, only to find that the Canadian soldiers, not all, at the airport and the embassy are themselves sleeping out under the stars. If I can borrow a truck and drive around the city without a security escort, except, of course, for the protection that my rugged good looks and magnetic personal charm afford me, If I can fend off the hordes of unruly, hungry people who seem to call forth images of Mogadishu for those in security details and interviews, oh, I apologize this, but come on already. A journalist I've been talking to followed the aid effort this week, and his description of a UN convoy is as follows. The convoy is ready early in the morning, but it takes 5 to 6 hours for the security detail composed of UN soldiers to get ready. By 2 p.m., they roll out to a designated meeting place with local officials and give them the goods, and leave. No verification of distribution. He did tell me, however, that yesterday he noticed that about 40 tents had been given to a sheet city, which is what they are since most of the people are using bedsheets and blankets, right next to the UN compound. It's a start, I suppose. Last night I talked to someone in logistics at the airport who works for a very large multinational organization out of New York. I asked about tents and aids. His words, it's a clusterfuck. I'll spare you the details, but that seems to be the consensus. Getting food, water, and shelter to people is not rocket science. But talking to people who have been on the ground here for years and who could have had things done much more quickly and efficiently, the politics of aid are, well, you know. You have to forgive the sarcasm. I was in Jimani yesterday and watched for hours as truck after truck without military escort went into Haiti unimpeded, and I saw a heavily armed convoy waiting just inside the Haitian border, just waiting before moving out to face the perilous hordes of the hungry in the menacing Magic Island. I also saw a UN warehouse in Jimani full of supplies. That was a posting titled Reflections on Tents by Thor Burnham on the Corbett List. Here's also a message posted to the Corbett List from Judith D'Amico, a doctor living in Haiti. She writes, "For those of you who are in the process or are considering sending medicines and supplies to Haiti, please make sure they're needed and that there's a group on the ground who can receive and use them efficiently. There is news that well-intentioned groups have loaded pallets and shipping containers with whatever they could find and sent them to Haiti without minding these two key principles. Those unpacking the containers are telling us that a significant portion of the supplies are not particularly useful. Many have come without even an inventory of what was sent, which means that important staff time has to be taken to inventory the shipment and try to determine its usefulness and wear. All this bogs things down at the airport even more." This is a message to groups organizing shipments from Judith D'Amico, a doctor and resident of Haiti, posted on the Corbett List. And on the island of La Gonâve, haven to some 30,000 displaced people for whom the bottleneck in the delivery of food, shelter, and medical supplies has yet to unplug, Paul D'Agostino, working at the hospital there, posted this update on the website HaitiLumiere.org. He writes, "Our two most immediate concerns have been medical supplies and a means of caring for the people with health conditions too serious to treat adequately at the hospital in Ansagalé. We are finally making progress on getting the medical supplies. Our contact at AmeriCares called me late this afternoon. Their people at the airport are going to try to coordinate directly with our folks to get us the supplies we need. We have a plan, and we're moving forward. If that falls through, there's at least one other organization at the airport that we've been able to get in touch with that might be able to help us. For the first time in a while, I'm feeling optimistic." Even better news came in the form of a group of doctors from Cuba who recently arrived and set up an operation in the port town of San Marc. San Marc is on the coast of the mainland just north of Ansagalé. The hospital was able to get in touch with them and relocate the most serious and difficult to treat cases over to their location where they can get the operations and care they desperately need. Obviously, we still have lots of concern about what's going on in Haiti and the situation on La Gonâve, but we're ending the day feeling positive. Relatively speaking, it was a good day. To all of you who come forward with ideas and connections to organizations, thank you. All of that is good and useful information." Those are the words of Paul D'Agostino from the hospital on the island of La Gonâve. He works for the organization Haiti Lumière de Demain on the web at HaitiLumiere.org. That's Haiti, L-U-M-I-E-R-E. This has been an update on the situation in Haiti. You can learn more about the work of groups and individuals mentioned in this update and how to support them by going to www.couragewoman.org. This report was produced by KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, and Yin Radio at yinradio.org. I'm Nancy Casey. Bye.
bagay ete tout an de bon boise.